good morning. It is Monday morning and Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone in the room. It is time to check the agenda, and sadly, Valentine's Day not on the agenda for most of the country. We're joined by Charlie Herman, economics editor for The Takeaway and WNYC Radio. What's your phrase for the week, Charlie?
I've been going back and forth a bit on it, but I think I've said it on cautious.
Well, okay.
Cautious for the president's budget is cautious.
Okay. Noel King, managing producer for The Takeaway, your word for the week?
My word for the week is Plan B. Remember when it became clear that what was happening in Egypt was unprecedented? The Obama administration took a lot of flack for not having a Plan B. This week, we're going to see a hastily assembled Plan B playing out from Washington across Egypt and the rest of the Middle East.
Well, as soon as they have a Plan B, it means they're going to need a Plan C.
That's how
it works. But since you talked about the Middle East, let's go. Obviously, the protests began in Tunisia. They traveled over to Egypt, and now we're seeing the cabinet of the Palestinian Authority resigned this morning. Yemen is in the fourth day of protests there, and we're also seeing signs that Iran, the people of Iran, may be joining uprisings soon. So let's talk about this Plan B, the U.S. perspective on how exactly to handle the Arab world. What is our Plan B?
Well, let's take a look first at what's going on in Yemen, because there was a significant shift this weekend, which is really very interesting. The U.S., remember, in Yemen has tremendous concerns about terrorism because of the presence of Al-Qaeda and the cleric Anwar al-Awlaki. To this point, the protests in Yemen have been the entrenched opposition parties who are going up against the government and marching in the streets and saying, we want reforms. What happened this weekend was different. Our sources on the ground in Yemen tell us that for the first time, the opposition indicated that they are willing to sit down and negotiate with the president. The people marching in the streets were students. They were young people who had organized themselves via text message. As a result, these protests were smaller, but it also means that the U.S. has no direct line right now to talk to the people who are in the streets in Yemen because they are not a formal opposition.
And we should say Yemen, one of the lowest, most poverty-stricken nations in the Arab world and highly armed.
The same basket of concerns that was a problem in Egypt, but with a lot of guns added into the mix.
Yeah, so that always makes everything a lot better. I wanted to play you this comment from Vice President Joe Biden. This is a comment he made just a couple days ago.
I say to our Iranian friends, let your people march. Let your people speak. Release your people from jail. Let them have a voice.
Well, we know that Ahmadinejad listens to the United States and loves Joe Biden on his speed dial, one of his tweet followers. Right.
This was a really interesting moment last week. Biden was speaking to students at the University of Louisville, and it was sort of a meandering speech. He was looking back and forth, and you know, it was a bit long-winded. And then toward the end of the speech, he looked directly in the camera and made that statement. What we're watching out of Iran this week, now the headline this morning is that the State Department has launched a Farsi language Twitter feed.
The U.S. State Department.
The U.S. State Department,
right,
of course.
Starting to tweet in Farsi.
Mm-hmm. And what's been going on since the beginning of the protests in Egypt is that the U.S. and Iran have fought to control the message. What does Egypt mean? The Iranians stepped out in front and said,
Ahmadinejad said, all power to the Islamist uprising.
That's exactly it. They're throwing off the shackles of their relationship with the U.S. The opposition in Iran then said, all right, if you're okay with Egyptians marching in the streets, we'd like to do so also. At which point the U.S. stood up and said, sure, Iran, put your money where your mouth is. You're okay with protesters? Let your own people, as you heard Biden say, go into the streets. That's what we'll be watching this week, what kind of statements the U.S. makes on Iran to Iran.
Right, except that there's already signs that Iran is ready to crack down pretty hard.
Absolutely,
on the protesters
absolutely.
There. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's talk back in the United States, Charlie, about our own budget problems. President Obama is expected to send a budget proposal for 2012 to the Congress today. It could be a long time before that budget approved. But looking in broad strokes, what exactly are the themes of President Obama's budget?
Well, the big theme is that he wants to be able to cut the deficit down to about reports of cutting the deficit by $1.1 trillion over the next 10 years. And really the idea here is to try and reduce the percentage of the deficit that is part of GDP. Right now it's around 10%. The goal is to bring it down to about 3% by about 2017.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. But it's still not as much as the commission that he had put together that came up with its proposals at the end of last year, which had proposed about $4 trillion. So it's cautious in that regard.
He's not proposing to do anything the commission said, at least not much. Nothing on entitlements, nothing on the big things.
Nothing on the really big things. And the administration has said if we come out, you know, with guns blazing on all this stuff, the politicized environment that we're in right now, Republicans will just say no to everything. So this is sort of the first salvo in a first shot in a very long discussion that's going to happen throughout the year. And let's keep in mind that Congress has still yet to permanently fund last year's budget, which or last year's government, which we're about 4 or 5 months in already. And there's fights over that. That's fiscal year 2011, I should say. Now the president is proposing fiscal year 2012. And at the same time, we're running up against this debt ceiling. I mean, this whole issue of debt is pretty much going to be, I think, the story of this year. Yes, jobs are still there, clearly, but the financial crisis, whatever else is going on in the economy, it really is about debt and government spending.
Well, let's go back to President Obama's budget proposal quickly, because, yes, the White House has said that the commission's recommendations would never get past the Republicans, but it doesn't look like I can't imagine this budget proposal getting past them either. I mean, the way that he's getting these cuts, there's a lot of Pentagon cuts in here. We know that's not something that Republicans really appreciate.
Well, this has been the fundamental problem with doing any sort of revisions to the government spending, which is there are some groups who say we need to increase taxes and some say you need to just cut other programs. And then a very little discussion about really addressing entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare. And then you have other groups who say you can't even touch the Pentagon spending. So what you have is this very tiny part of discretionary spending for programs like the Environmental Protection Agency. There's a lot of calls on Capitol Hill to cut funding there. The programs like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting looking to cut that entirely. The president's proposal itself has several billion dollars worth of cuts to the program to help in the Northeast people pay for home heating. So there are winners and losers that are going to happen in this battle. And I think that's one of the things that while this is a cautious proposal to really, really fundamentally address the problems that we have are going to require some big cuts that I don't know if anyone is really willing to accept because everyone's going to lose a little bit.
All right. Well, that's our national problem. And our national problem is in some ways reflected of the international problem. And on that note, the G20 summit is going to begin this week. And, you know, at this point, many people are saying, look, who cares about the G20 summit anymore? They don't do anything.
Well, that's a proposal. That's an idea out there by two political thinkers. They call it the G0. They say that basically the G20 has become obsolete. And it's this idea that no one country is driving the global agenda. China has its own issues. The U.S. has its own issues to deal with. Other countries like Russia or Europe, everyone's so busy taking care of their own needs that there's really no one out there leading the world economically.
Well, although, interesting news that Japan is no longer our second largest economy.
Yeah, there goes China.
How many years until the U.S. Loses our top spot?
I'm not predicting that one.
Oh, come on. Charlie Herman, the economics editor for both The Takeaway, and our flagship station, WNYC, and Noel King, managing producer for The Takeaway. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Happy Valentine's. Thanks.